You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 14 September. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Gary Boyson, commodity stocks. Lows for the years, what do we do with them? Metrofile on results that came out yesterday. And the new CEO at 10X, Toby van Heerden. I want to talk around the state of passive in South Africa and future trends we might see coming through. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Will the FSCA's 50 million rand fine on Viceroy have a chilling effect on research? Well, Viceroy undoubtedly says that, and their claim is less likely that we will find the next Steinhoff ahead of time. I think that the truth probably lies somewhere in the middle. I think there is going to be, research writers are perhaps going to be a little more careful. Misleading and false statements. Chilling effect? Time will tell. Business day, Evergrande debt restructuring is almost unavoidable. Remember, I chatted with two Viv governed about this on Friday. China Evergrande Group, $300 billion debt, looks like it's going to restructure to avoid a complete default. Watching it closely, that sort of the ripple effect of Chinese debt, see how that plays out. Morning markets mixed in the US, S&P up 0.2, NASDAQ down 6 points, 0.04%. Asia mixed, Sydney down 0.1, Turkey up 0.4%. Commodities mixed overnight, gold 1,792, Rand 1416. Top 40 opening call, green open about 140 points up, that's about 0.2%. That as Tencent is trading up 0.2% in Hong Kong.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Gary Boyson, our portfolio manager at Rand Swiss. Gary, morning, appreciate the time. When I messaged you and said, let's check commodities and what to do with commodity stocks, you said, yeah, that's easy. we've got them at, certainly on Friday, they were closing, Thursday, Friday, closing around the lows for the year. What are you and your team at Rand Swiss? I mean, is the South African commodity stocks, are they buys, are they sells, are they holds? Is it depending which commodities they are?
Well, I suppose it's easy because it's such a robust sector to talk about. It's not very easy to pick a buy, sell, or hold, especially in this market where you've got things like Wall Street bets driving share prices. So, if you look at the underlying fundamentals of the company, I would say companies at least, it does seem like you're getting pretty reasonable prices, and these companies are doing exceptionally well. So, if you look at the Bloomberg Commodity Index, we're up about 31% for the year, and that's on average. So that includes things like the power complex and softs and grains and all sorts of things. But what we had in August was this little wobble where the market came off to these lows around the 20th, and I think that just spooked everyone as well. And people are starting to remember that commodity prices are super it's very, very cyclical. Mm-hmm. I remember sitting opposite a dealer, and he always used to say, when P's are low on commodity stocks, that's when you sell them. And it's kind of a little bit counterintuitive, because if you look at what's going on inside these companies, they're taking a much more conservative approach. And I mean, we can talk about Platts, we can talk about Sibanye. You look at what's going on inside here. I mean, they're returning an enormous amount of cash to shareholders. It's not just in terms of the dividends, which you mentioned, Implats and Sibanye both ex-dividend tomorrow, so last day to trade today. But I mean, they've also got enormous share buybacks in place as well. So the idea that we had, let's say a couple of decades ago or a decade and a half ago, where, when commodity prices were high, these guys were just sinking shafts and buying assets and, going absolutely berserk to increase production. It doesn't seem to be the case this time around. It looks like the management teams are a lot more conservative. And what that's going to do, especially in let's say, the PGM space, it's going to keep supply a lot tighter than it was in the past. So, I think it seems to me that the market's reacting to almost historical price action. But if you actually look at what's going on inside these companies, I don't want to say it, but is this time different?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying then. I mean, certainly the fundamentals internal to the businesses remain there. I mean, we're talking PGMs. I mean, the gold stocks, do we just leave gold miners to their own devices?
It's difficult to, again, leave stocks there and advice. But I think it's probably good advice. Let's talk about a specific gold stock, which will be Sibanye. Mm-hmm. You know, the company has changed so much since it was spun off out of gold fields. And that's one of the things that you can do. You know, even though gold miners do tend to get deeper and more expensive as they dig holes in the ground, you've got an incredible management teams here that are going out specifically to, you know, change the commodity mix. You know, it's a big focus that a lot of these miners now are looking at future metals. We know Neil Farnham is looking at, things like uranium. They're using Beatrix West and old Cook kind of mine dumps to try and generate, a significant kind of uranium output, just based on the fact that, you know, uranium prices are going berserk and, you know, they expect, you know, much more demand from Asian nuclear power plants. Not to say that's where the demand is coming from, because if you look at something like the Sprott Uranium ETF up, you know, over 200% at the moment, that really was driven by Wall Street bets. That was driven by speculators just going and buying into this uranium ETF. So, like I said, market's always crazy, but if you're backing good management teams that are not irresponsible with shareholder capital, you can really sit back and just relax. And commodity stocks will be volatile, but when you get big dip-offs like this, for me, it seems to be presenting a buying opportunity.
We'll leave that there. Gary Boyson, Portfolio Manager at Rand Swiss. That is our question today on our social media, LinkedIn and Twitter. Your take on those commodity stocks. Are they buys it at these levels, or perhaps you're waiting for even lower levels, or perhaps you've just been holding? I've been holding. Their dividends coming. Sibanye LDT today, Implats Monday. You can have your vote. You can have your say on our LinkedIn and Twitter at MoneyWeb Profiles.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Metrophile CEO Fungwa Sarami. Disclaimer, I own Metrophile shares. Results to year-end June, revenue was up 3%, but HEPS up 28%. Net debt down at $434 million. Cash flow strong and a 15-cent full-year dividend. Fungwa, appreciate the early morning time. Next, touch on that debt. I mean, the debt has come down quite markedly, now sitting at that $434 million for your net debt. Is this a level which, as a group, sort of you're comfortable with your gearing levels at these levels?
Good morning, Simon, and thanks a lot for inviting us. You're absolutely correct. It's where we wanted it to be. We'll continue to improve it, but certainly it's something that the board is very comfortable, as well as management.
They're looking at your operations, new box volume overall up 8%. Net, but South Africa sort of finding a little bit harder. My sense of your operations is, and it's kind of going to be sort of GDP linked, notwithstanding your ability to grab some market share. I mean, what is the situation you're finding within South Africa?
Yeah, so you're absolutely correct. So we found a rhythm that is almost very close to the lockdowns that we experienced last mm-hmm. year, where, you know, whenever there's not lockdown, there's a lot of traction, and we see even the spike in terms of activities. But that slows down whenever a lockdown is there, you know. But otherwise, net-net, quite a tough market. But again, there are pockets of good activities, especially in four main industries. We saw some impressive activities in public sector. Mm-hmm. We also saw, improvement in the retail and health, as well as financial services, to some extent.
Okay, yeah, so sort of those key economic sectors. What do you estimate your market share in South Africa to be?
It's because most of our colleagues or competitors that they are called traditionally are not, you know, listed. We presume our market share to be probably about 60%.
Okay, so absolutely the dominant player in the space. We're talking South Africa there, but of course you've got some Africa, you've got some Middle East operations. These are smaller operations, but really kicking in. I mean, operating profits up 50% for those two regions, starting to become significant in your life. Perhaps, you know, at this point they're there, but if you roll it forward a couple of years, they've become quite meaningful.
You can say that again. So... I mean, as countries try to become more compliant and hedge themselves against risk, there's a need for them to start looking at how they can store their information safely. So if you look at it, you know, Mozambique is good, Botswana is good, Kenya is good, and the returns, in fact, in terms of the services that we offer, relatively good. Whilst it is small, the potential is huge.
Looking at, we've been talking here, your traditional boxes and paper and the like, you've also got digital services. And I imagine, you know, at this point, and the paperless office was a big thing in the 80s and the 90s. I'm still sitting here with a piece of paper. It's still there. But digital is becoming more and more significant.
Yes. In fact, you know, the COVID situation accelerated the digital adoption by many customers, including individuals, by the way. So it is something that Metrofile is staying close to. We have got a division that is growing significantly. Whilst it's starting from a smaller base, we can see that it's accelerating quite aggressively. And we will definitely be looking at making sure that we grow that part of our business.
Is the digital services, I mean, you know, in the olden days when I would, let's take a financial service, I would do my FICA and that would be literally pieces of paper I would then submit to them. Now I'm doing it on my mobile and it's a photo of my ID, it's a photo of my face. So it's the same sort of, in a sense, documents, just they're digital rather than paper.
Yes, there's that, as well as... you know, being able to make a decision at origination of data on which part of your data and information you would like to convert into digital. Mm-hmm. And obviously there will be some that you convert into paper, but you're right. So there will be some line of business processes that will probably be automated to make it easier for customers to be able to transact.
Last question, there were some offers to delist the business. Those, of course, pre-COVID. COVID nixed that. It just wasn't practical for due diligence and the like. Are those now off the table and no negotiations happening in that space?
Well, we haven't finalized it as yet, but obviously that's something that may happen, obviously COVID situation permitting. But certainly the conversation for the meantime to allow us to focus on growth. We are continuing as if nothing is happening currently. But I would like to presume that at some stage these partners will come back.
They will come back potentially. They have to come back with better price because price is where they were offering, in fact, slightly ahead. Metrofile CEO Fungwe Sirima, appreciate the time this morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com. or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Toby van Heerden, new CEO at 10X. Been there, just 2 weeks. Toby, appreciate the time this morning. You joined 10X from 91, an active investment house. The shift in style, I mean, is that a big career slash philosophical shift for you, or am I seeing far too much into that?
Good morning, Simon. Nice to speak to you. It is a bit of a shift from active to passive, but you know, inherently, I think the running the businesses, there's a lot of similarities. I mean, the shift is for me is much more applying my global knowledge that I've learned at 91 in this African context. So there's a lot of similarities in that I can do.
Yeah, okay, I take your point on that. I mean, ultimately, it's asset management, right? And you know, whether it's active or passive, a lot of the background stuff is going to be largely the same. If we look at passive, like, I mean, passive is certainly taken off. In the US, we've got about 40% of the market. In the UK, around 30%. My sense of South Africa is that we are probably still in single digits in terms of passive in our market and are lagging the rest of the world.
Yeah, our numbers are scary low. In the unit trust space, we're around 6% is passive. So compare that to the UK, for instance, which I think is a good comparison at 18% in the retail space. And in institutional space in South Africa, I think we're even lower than that compared to 30% in the UK. So we're lagging very, very far behind in terms of global standards.
In that sort of the retirement, the sort of retirement fund managers and like, is it just, you know, the old school thinking which clings to us active, or has our industry thus far, and the industry is what, or 20 years old, sort of just not been out there selling itself to the institutional market?
Look, I think the industry hasn't done the consumers really justice in the space in terms of how we've developed our business models and how we've developed product in the passive space. I mean, at the moment, there's no clear, independent, pure play passive house that's large enough scale that can really compete in this market. I think 10X is one of the places that we obviously want to grow and become one of the incumbents in this market. But if you look at the rest out there in South Africa, there's no real independent pure play. And therefore, the fees that is charged by passive players, there's not enough of a discrimination between the fees of passive and active. So for the consumer then to decide whether we're going to go active or passive is, you know, you'd rather play the optionality of going down the active route because there's no such a big difference between the fees.
I take your point on that. I mean, certainly I look at the trend of the fees in passive over the last two decades, and it's been coming lower. But truthfully, it's been coming lower for the entire industry. And you know, whilst I can, you know, pick up a passive fund at maybe 40, 50, 60 basis points, in some cases 20, 25, yeah, I can pick up active at not a heck lot more. And I get that optionality of potential outperformance.
Exactly. I mean, if you look at globally, the sort of the average passive fund fee is sitting around 12 basis points, where active is sitting around 72 basis points. So there's a big difference. In Africa, if you look at it, you know, active is around about 75 basis points, whereas the passive guys are sitting at, and I'm one of them, is sitting at 40 to 50 basis points. So, so the discrimination is not there, right?
So I mean, is that, I mean, one of the big trends over time is more pushing of those passive fees down, which it comes back to your earlier point. It's you know, a passive house which is, you know, solely independent and focused and designed just to be passive, and therefore to push those fees and get them, you know, from 50 to 40 to 20 in time.
Exactly. I mean, if you're sitting in a house where you've got a large overhead, you're going to pay to the mothership. You know, it's very hard to get those costs down. So you're using the operation and infrastructure platform. You cannot develop tech to give you those efficiencies. Mm-hmm. Or we are tied to somebody in terms of how you distribute, where you don't mind paying or getting the higher fees. Whereas in a purely independent house, you have to eat those efficiencies out. You have to build scale, and you have to have the meritocracy going through the system. And therefore, you can push those fees down.
So I hear you on that, and that is, you know, I've always thought, you know, these fees aren't bad, but truthfully, that they've got a long way to go, and that 50 versus 75.
Very long way to go.
Yeah,
very long way.
I mean, 50 to 75, that's quite stark. We'll leave that there. Toby van Heerden, CEO 10X, appreciate the time this morning. That's it for today. Our poll yesterday, which we asked you on our LinkedIn and Twitter account, we were chatting with Gareth Elston there from Readway Global around office space. And it just, I mean, it was in trouble before the pandemic. It's in a lot more trouble post the pandemic. We asked you, are you going back to the office? Half of you said no. A third of you said, maybe, but only a few days a week. The rest of you, about 15-18%, said, yes, you want to go back. You miss your office. You miss the water cooler talk and your colleagues and the like. But telling that a chunk of you are frankly saying, I want to stay at home. I think the office space sector is in some trouble, and our retailers perhaps also overtraded in the REIT space. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Cordora, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contribution. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.